Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, what's up? This is Seth Green, and you are listening to Somewhere in Vegas with Mark, and I am so hot, I would desperately like a glass of water. Please, please, give me some water.
This is Cindy Preston, and I'm with Mark on Somewhere in Vegas.
Hi, this is Melissa Peterman from CMT's The Singing Bee and the television show Reba, and I have to tell you, I just have to get it off my chest, I love Somewhere in Vegas with Mark.
Hi there. This is Faith Roscoe from General Hospital. You're listening to Mark on Somewhere in Vegas. And you better watch out. We know how to find you if you're not listening.
Hi, this is Shannon Egan from Whippet, and I love Somewhere in Vegas with Mark.
Hey, this is Lee Allen Baker with Somewhere in Vegas, talking with Mark with a Q.
This is Courtney Cronin. You're listening to Somewhere in Vegas with your host, Mark, and I would make sure to listen every week because he's a sure bet.
Hey, this is the Money Man, Eddie Money. I got two tickets to Paradise, and it's, you know what? It's Somewhere in Vegas. And what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas.
Hi, this is Crystal Kale, and I love Somewhere in Vegas with Mark.
Hi, this is Terry Nunn from Berlin, and you're listening to Mark Somewhere in Vegas.
Hi, this is Miracle Laurie from Joss Whedon's Dollhouse. There are three flowers in a vase, and I'm listening to Somewhere in Vegas with Mark.
Hi, this is Erin Hill, and you are listening to Mark on Blog Talk Radio and Somewhere in Vegas. Mark is a great guy.
Hi, this is Sean Pulaski. I'm still trying to figure out Mark Pico's sexuality, but I know you're listening to Somewhere Live in Vegas.
Here you go, Mark. I'm sorry. I thought you were she. I'm sorry. Get out of the tent. Let's get out of here.
Hey, this is Lance and Anna from Free Radio. And Anna?
And you're listening to Somewhere in Vegas.
Yes.
My favorite.
You know, that's usually what happens with me. I go to Vegas and I get lost, and so I end up somewhere in Vegas.
Somewhere in Vegas.
But I just don't know where it is.
Not quite sure.
Yeah, word.
Get ready. It's going to be hot. It's in Vegas. Check out Mark. Be there or be square.
Welcome, everybody, to Somewhere in Vegas here on blogtalkradio.com. I'm Mark the Q. I'm your host. Hopefully, in just a few minutes, we're going to have the musician and author, the Black Hat, a.k.a. Jack Othello. We'll be talking a little bit about his book that just came out. Also, a little bit about his career as a music producer. It's going to be great to be able to talk to him a little bit about the history. He's come all the way from Flint, Michigan, all the way, and he's been a world traveler and has worked with a lot of great artists, so we're going to be able to talk to him. Hopefully in just a few minutes. We had a little technical difficulties on Thursday, so hopefully those are resolved today, so we'll be able to get him on the show. I'm going to go ahead and play a little music, and hopefully when we get back, we're going to have the Black Hef on with us. I don't know if it's the board still acting up or what, but it was working when I got in. So let me go ahead and play some music here real quick, and then we'll have the Black Hef when we get back, one way or the other.
Yeah.
paid now. Time is of the essence, and I choose to do it right now.
Okay, I'm going to call you back, and then when you pick up, we'll be live, okay? Okay, are you there, Hef? Hold on 1 second, guys. Trying to get everyone on the line real quick. Okay, hold on a second, guys. We're going to get him on the line. I'm going to go ahead and put him on the line real quick. I just have to call him up real quick. Hold on 1 second. Okay, are you there, Hef?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you good. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, I kind of find it interesting. First of all, apologies to what happened last week. It was some technical difficulties on our end of things. But, I found this story absolutely fascinating, how you kind of worked your way up from the streets of Flint, Michigan, all the way up to where you are right now. I mean, you know, what does it mean to you, looking back, of all the hustle and all the hard work that you did to get to the point where you're at right now?
It makes me have it gives me an extreme level of gratitude, so to speak, to where I'm I could never lose appreciation to where I've been blessed to be able to get to, but knowing where I really came from. And the struggle and the suffering and the agony that I went through, my family members just coming up, just barely, you know, and barely having anything, you know, just not really, you know, having much, you know. And then but the real reality for it is that I still got family members and people that's still there in that same struggle. So for me to be removed from it and to be blessed, it's like I can always look right back into my past by the people that you know, about just going and look at people that I know and family members that's still in that city where I grew up and came from that's going through those same struggles. And then when I look at myself in a big house, living comfortable, no stress, no problems, no confusion, no police, no ducking from the police, no living any, no illegal activity around me, it just, like I said, it gives me an extreme level of gratitude that I can't even, you know, that compares to nothing else that I knew about as far as, you know, where the way I feel is very strong. It's unbelievable. All I can say is it's a true blessing, no doubt.
Yeah, I mean, how do you see, you know, I've talked to people from Detroit, and they're saying that Detroit's on the rebound right now. It's really kind of reinventing itself as well. How do you see Flint now from where you when you started to right where it is right now?
Well, it was always bad, but it wasn't as bad. But now, I mean, Flint is going through, it's almost like quiet is kept. Flint is almost in third world country category, honestly. I mean, and that's sad to say, and people wouldn't believe it. But if you go there, I mean, there's people. I was just talking to a cousin of mine about another cousin of mine. This man had his family living in the house. They had three kids. His girl, they lived there. And I used to come in town, go over to his house. Long story short, I went to use his bathroom, and, you know, the toilet was messed up, so I just had to pee. It wasn't a number two, so I didn't tear it up. I'm just joking, talking junk. But anyway, I went to use the bathroom, flush the toilet, so I just thought the toilet was some, you know, the handle was messed up. So I tell him, hey, man, I tried to flush the toilet, and the handle was messed up. He said, oh, cuz, that ain't nothing. He said, I ain't never had running water over here. So you mean to tell me you've been living here all these years with your girl, your kids in this house? And the bad part about it, He had a barbecue business where he sold barbecue, and it was just unbelievable to me that he would be living all these years in a home with his family, and the way they flushing the toilet and washing dishes is he borrowing water from other people's houses who have running water for years in a row.
Yeah, I mean, it just goes to show that we still have a lot of mending to do and a lot of work, internal work to do in terms of this country. I mean, It's sad to see that kind of situation happen as well. I mean, you know, I'm really hoping that things get better from now on, especially in Flint, because I mean, it's taken a very huge hit, you know, over the past 20 years. So, fingers crossed, things get better a little bit over there as well. Tell me a little bit about how you got started on the music end of things.
Well, I've always been, you know, a real, you know, connoisseur of music and first of all, a big fan of you know, R&B and, you know, rapping. So I just, when I was younger, I, you know, started just rapping in the hood with a few guys and was in a group when I was in a group called the Rush MCs when I was, in the eighth grade with my next door, neighbor. His birthday was one day after mine, and so we became a group called the Rush MCs, and we performed in our junior high school talent show. And from there, I always, you know, wanted to pursue it. And at that time, that's when the gangster rap era was really, really jumping off with N.W.A. and Ice Cube and all those different things. And so Eazy-E, and it was just like, and I was just, like I said, and I'm only in like the seventh, eighth grade. And so once I got into the ninth grade, I wanted, you know, I was more so stuck in my mind, you know, seventh and eighth grade. I got to the ninth grade. That's when crack cocaine had really hit Flint. And so once crack cocaine had hit Flint, my summer of going to the eighth grade, from the eighth grade going to the ninth, is when I first started selling crack cocaine, and once I started making fast money, it kind of deterred me away from trying to pursue music because I had became a hustler and I started making money. So my focus was on making more money, and I kind of like let the music go. But then, a friend of mine that was actually in that same talent show in the eighth grade, him and his group won first place. My group won second place. He ended up getting a big deal with Relativity Records, and they had put some independent stuff out, and it did really well. And so once I seen that, me having a little money from hustling, I decided to just after getting a little advice from my buddy who had got a major deal from a company that I had been close friends with, I had just started clinging close to him and basically had him take me to the studio one time and help me with one song because I had already had my own money. And then from there, I just started going to the studio, getting beats, writing songs, coming up with beats. And that's how I formulated my first album. And it was the title of the album. My first album was titled Out to Get Rich because as me hustling in the process of it, that was the whole thing, whether it was from selling drugs, whether it was from rapping, whatever, by any means, my whole focus the whole time, even to this day, I've been out to get rich.
Yeah, about that time, I mean, it was kind of an East Coast, West Coast thing, but we're seeing a lot more rappers, grow for the Midwest and from the South and as well. I mean, we're seeing that extension all the way up to today, that we're seeing a lot more different places to be. To be a rapper and to make their breaks. I mean, what, you know, for you, I mean, obviously, you know, it was kind of a breakout moment for you being from Flint, which isn't really known for its music, to be able to do rap and be successful at it.
Yeah, well, it's like I say, Eminem's from Detroit, and you know that the game has evolved because, like I say, he was honored the best rapper of the century, you know. So when you got and I wouldn't take anything away from him for having that title. He's a great and very talented artist, you know, from everything I've seen from him. So I wouldn't say that wasn't deserved. But what I would say is that when the era of rap first came about, that would, if you would have told somebody the best rapper of the century would be a white boy, you might have got laughed at. You got laughed at for days and days and weeks and maybe months and months, because that's just something that wasn't possible at that time. But like you said, the industry has evolved from the East to West to North, Midwest to South, and so now the lane is open to be able to, more people are into more varieties, and more people with the fan base of rap expanding throughout the world now, it brings more room for different genres and cultures and individuals to introduce themselves to fans through the rap industry and be able to gain fan base credibility and get recognized. But it's also due to the availability of independency and self-distribution and social media and advertisement and the transfer of information, which is way faster these days than it was back then. So I've seen it evolve, and like I say, I'm trying to stay on the cutting edge of technology, information, and what's happening today, you know, with the industry.
Yeah, because I mean, back in the day when you started, I mean, there was no such thing as a social media presence or, you know, YouTube for that matter, and the way that you would spread it would be through mixtapes and CDs and trying to get your stuff played. I mean, it almost seems like it's a little bit easier now to get your stuff out, but not necessarily easier to get famous by it, but, how tough was it back in the day when you didn't have those outlets to be able to distribute your music, and you really did have to hustle in order to get people to listen to your music?
To be honest, it was almost a lot of people gave up because it was so discouraging that to not really have, like you say, Flint is not known for rap. You know, it's not a, so you don't have companies like Capitol Records. If you live in LA, Capitol Records, you know, 20 minutes away from you, you get close to Hollywood, you can see the building in the sky. You know, so that wasn't an option in Flint. So, you know, basically we was just stuck with trying to use every possible outlet to get noticed, or to, like you said, social media is the thing today. You can have fans and people all over the world, you know, if you got good material, you know, the blink of an eye. Well, back then we had to put, as you was mentioning, the ways of promotion. A lot of things that I did was, You know, I'll be in the daytime, I'll be out passing out flyers, putting flyers on the counters and stores and barbershops and salons. Then after I finish that, I'll go and take a staple gun and put posters on telephone poles in different cities, wherever I was at promoting. And then the flyers, I had flyers that used to be stickers. So back then it wasn't cell phones like it is now. So people used to use a lot of pay phones. So I would have sticker flyers, and I would go around and putting those sticker flyers on the side of pay phones. Like, it was just any way that you could possibly think to try to get public awareness, that's what it was. But it was, like I said, it was a serious grind, and it wasn't as easy as just putting your stuff on you. It was no YouTube. It was no Facebook. There was no Twitter or Instagram. So there was, you know, for people to know about you, you had to be really out there in the mix, you know, putting your face in the place and grinding it down to get any kind of recognition.
Yeah, with so many people trying to do that nowadays, you really do have to kind of differentiate yourself from that, and that takes a lot of work too. So, you know, I think it's a different kind of hustle, but it's a hustle nonetheless. So, you know, it's interesting to see these new artists come out and try to make their marks, as it were, even on a global stage, as it were, too. So it's interesting to see kind of the evolution of what it takes to become, become one of the prominent rappers in the game right now. You know, why did you decide to move from Flint to Memphis?
Well, Flint to Memphis was a transition that was inevitable because of the, like I said, only thing that's in Flint is drug dealing and killing. So, I mean, there was at that point when I moved to Memphis, I was at a transition in my life to where I had to make a change. I was forced to make a change, because if I didn't make a change, then my fate was death or jail, you know, without a doubt. So after I had seen and understood that, I had I made up my mind to just go out and take what money I had hustled up on and try my luck in the world and see what the world has to offer me. So I went to end up going over to Memphis for a party for a friend of mine. I was in Atlanta trying to make some things happen, and went over to Memphis for a friend of mine's birthday party. And long story short, I ended up having to stay over there for a couple of days extra. Some different stuff happened, and I got introduced to some different people and got a hold of some different information. And you know, I started to utilize that information, and you know, by me doing so, it made me have to stay planted in Memphis in order to see it through. So that's what I had. That's what I did. I went on ahead and posted myself up in Memphis, got me a place there, and then just started my grind there. From, you know, still promoting my music, doing my thing, but also looking into other avenues of different business facets that I had never been introduced to.
Yeah, I mean, Memphis is an interesting city. It's, you know, it's definitely the hometown of the blues. It's really, I mean, the culture there is really kind of interesting in terms of the music culture there as well. I mean, plus the population is pretty much, you know, really, really enjoying music down there as well. I mean, what did it mean for you to perform and kind of be in Memphis at this time? And Memphis, I think, is a lot more now known now for more of the blues kind of sounds. And we're seeing some rappers out of the area that are making some noise. But what did it mean to you to be out of Tennessee and to be able to have that kind of audience?
Well, me, more so it was to move to Memphis and then to be able to get that recognition from, you know, the locals was really Southern hospitality, so to speak. You know, it was heartfelt. You know, I truly appreciated, you know, the warmness of how the town accepted me and let me come in and start working with the things I was working and the people that I was coming across. And so it wasn't a difficult transition. And you know, I was blessed to run into a lot of good people that was interested in helping me and seeing me move forward. And so by staying with those same people, Memphis, you know, it basically grew me up from, you know, a street hustler to, you know, to learning some other facets of business to push me to where I'm at right now, you know, in Texas, doing what I'm doing, being the black heifer, living the way I'm living. But a lot of the transitional stages of that transformative of the reinvention of myself, that whole thing was orchestrated right in Memphis, of course, you know, no doubt.
Yeah, I think it's great. I mean, the connections you made there, I mean, and just kind of, you know, through your trips to California as well, and throughout that, I mean, it's you know, you've met some really great people along the way that I think would pretty much what I would say that it probably influenced you and helped you kind of gain the success you've had so far. I mean, what does it mean to you to have had so many great people to be able to you know, ask questions about or to be able to, you know, help you guide your career?
Once again, it's just God's blessing. You know, I've learned at this stage in life that money is nothing. You know, I've seen a lot of people with money, especially in the ghetto. I've seen guys with six figures, you know, making a lot of money, and those same guys are dead or in jail, you know, right now calling, asking somebody to send them $20 or something. You know, these guys had $200,000, $300,000 in the ghetto, but they didn't have the information to turn that into more money or legitimate money. So what I learned is that the money is not really money. The money is in the information. So I stopped focusing on trying to get rich and just get money, even though the whole plan, like I said, from the first release of the album, I've been out to get rich, and that was my first album title. But when I got to Memphis and started moving and started networking with other people that was in different businesses and had different mindsets and views on life, it made me start acquiring the information, because I realized that if I acquire the information, I can always acquire the money, just like I know how to hustle. If I want to go back to the ghetto and start selling dope today, which I definitely wouldn't even consider at all, but if that was the case, well, my training in the ghetto has gave me the information to be able to go back to the ghetto and do that. But now when I went to Memphis and started meeting other people and talking to other celebrities and other business people, that opened my eyes up to know that, okay, well, let me acquire the information in these different industries the same way I've acquired information in my past career of illegalness and foolishness that I didn't know nothing about as growing up as a kid. But now let me get like these other professional people I'm meeting and acquire the information they can assist me with and listen closely. And then once I got the information, I can easily get closer to the same money that they're getting, because now the information can get me the money instead of me trying to take the money and then don't have the information. It's still a no winner.
Yeah, I mean, it's important for you to have information and know things. If you know something that's, you know, worthwhile, I think it's definitely something to pursue, and that's always something important as well. I mean, especially if you get some kind of lead or something like that, in terms of it. And you have to involve as a person. I notice a lot of rappers diversify. They're not just rappers anymore. They produce. They also look for outside ventures. They look into everything. Look at Dr. Dre. He ended up investing in Beats Audio, and he's a multimillionaire now off of that. So yeah, I mean, the diversification is always, you know, something you have to look out for, and I always admire that about some of these rappers being able to do that. So definitely a good thing to say to know about that. Being as such, tell me a little bit about how the Black Hef moniker came about.
Well, like I said, the Black Hef came about once I had acquired some information that I didn't have previously. That led me to starting to deal with other people in other industries. And so as I moved throughout the country while I was living in Memphis, I was still working my music and selling products, CDs independently through my distributors and things like that. But I had started dating girls that were dancers, more so. A lot of the girls that I started going with in Memphis, and once I got to Memphis, were girls who were strippers, who were involved in exotic dancing. So, but they were just they were just doing it for fun to make a few dollars. You know, it wasn't like they just do what most strippers do. You know, they go make them a few hundred dollars every, you know, couple of days a week and pay their bills, pay their cell phone bills, have them some money to get high with and buy a couple outfits with and go out to the club and party with the friends with. And so I looked at, I never really paid it much close attention because, like I said, wasn't in it. You know, it wasn't, I didn't have this business plan that I have acquired, you know, now. I didn't have that understanding of or knowledge or even concern for it back then. So it was just like, okay, you making your money, I got my money, no big deal. Okay, so I never paid it close attention. But what happened was one of my girlfriends, a friend of hers, came and stayed with us. And she needed somewhere to stay, so she worked at the club as well. So something, after that, she was around us for a while, and something just, you know, it made me start paying closer attention to the business because it wasn't just her there, it was her friend. And so it's making me just look at things a little bit more differently. So I started asking the kind of money that they were really making every night. And so when I seen that, you know, one would make this, one would make that, I said, man, well, what if they just put them two together and then did that every single day, you know, take a couple of days off a week or work, you know, 6 days a week, 5 days a week. And this, what if that was done in numbers and put together and treated like a business instead of treated like just some little bull crap you're just doing just to get by to make a few dollars? Because I've seen that the numbers that they were putting up could really add up to some numbers, some real money, if it was done from a professional and business standpoint and done on a consistent basis. So at that time, my father was in jail. He paroled to Tennessee and came and stayed with me for a while. Well, he has two business degrees. And so what he did was, once me and him would always talk about things that was on my mind. And so once he seen the girl, you know, my girl and her friend and the money that they were making, And I had told him the numbers, you know, because he didn't know, but I had told him what I had found out. He said, son, if you could fine-tune that and build that up with just those two young ladies and those numbers, he said, in no time, with consistency and the proper business plan and structure, you could turn that, what they're doing, into a business, and from a business to a Fortune 500 company. And the way that he was telling me to do it was a formula that he had worked with in the past from working in General Motors and building Saturn cars. Saturn, what they did with General Motors, when General Motors started the Saturn car and started building it, they built a whole separate plant in Columbia, Tennessee. Long story short, they didn't use the assembly line formula like they normally use to build all their cars. They used a formula called the team concept formula to build the Saturn cars, and my father transferred from Michigan to Columbia, Tennessee, to work with Saturn to build those cars. But in the process of the team concept, the formula they were using to build the cars, it was a formula that you could use in different industries. And so when my father had seen what I was telling him about the numbers, he was saying, all you need to do is implement that same team concept formula that we were using at Saturn to build those cars. You need to implement that into the industry with adult entertainment and girls dancing. And then if they let you manage the money and you put everything together, everybody can have money, live good, you can get good. So we just were just talking and joking at first, because like I said, I really wasn't concerned about it. I was just having fun, just having sex with pretty girl, you know, different dancers that I had been dating, but this girl I got serious with. But anyway, so once he told me that, I started talking to them about it. And, you know, they were, you know, they wasn't as understanding of it as I was, you know, because they don't understand business. They were just making fast money, having fun. You know, they wasn't even thinking about nothing like that. So I started looking and thinking deeper into that company and looking for people that would be that would be or would want to be committed and believe in the concept that went with it. And then from there, my father started structuring a business plan and started coming up with the way to do it, because he knew about the team concept formula. I didn't. All I did was listen to him as he talked, and he told me and showed me. And, you know, so long story short, that's how the company started with the Black Heft. So I've been working on that from, you know, now I've been working on the actual ideal of it for over the last past 10 years. So I've been up and running for the last five, but I had already been thinking, but it took me to get the right people. And it took a long time to get everything formulated, to get to a place where the club, where everything fit in and worked perfectly the way it is now. So once I got to Texas and things started working, and I had the right clients and people around me and the business structure and the contracts together and all of the things is moving around, me and the ladies were, would go and hang out. And then people would see me and see them, and they would say, that's the Black Hef. You know, and I had heard this several times in different places and states and, you know, parties and events we had attended. And so I said, it started ringing the bell. And so first thing I did was, I said, I'm going to just trademark it before I even let anybody know I'm going to use it or thinking about it. I just trademarked it. And I thought that when people called me that, I said, you're right, because I'm dealing with Caucasian women. I'm a Black man. And Hugh Hefner deals with beautiful women that are mostly Caucasian. I said, so if it's okay for the white man to do it, then it should be okay for the Black man to do it. And then once I researched Hugh Hefner a little bit more, I didn't even know that he was a civil rights activist. He supported and helped so many Black people become successful throughout his career. It's unreal, but people just don't know these things about him. But that's, so I researched that. So anyway, I picked the name up. It wasn't a self-titled. People started seeing me and started calling me the name. I adapted it, took it on, trademarked it, but it was all an aspiration because I was working with my own company that dealt in adult entertainment, as Hugh Hefner deals in adult entertainment, but it was just with my company just focusing on managing girls who dance or frequented exotic dance clubs and giving them a structure and a focus and a vision instead of going in there like the girlfriend I had was going in there doing and just blowing the money, never having nothing to show for it. So that's kind of like, you know, everything in a nutshell, so to speak. And I just, you know, kept going, and then just, you know, I haven't stopped. And, you know, from there, other people started recognizing me, the Discovery Channel, TMZ, the E! Channel on the Talk Soup. These people started giving me recognition, but they seen the sincerity in what I was doing and knew that I was truly legit. And I wouldn't call myself the Black Hef if I wasn't doing everything on the up and up and clean like the White Hef was, because I knew that it was going to bring instant attention to me. So I had to be doing everything, you know, on the straight and narrow, and that's what I do. And like I said, I'm proud to be it. You know, I'm proud to be here. I'm proud to be who I am, and I'm thankful. And like I said, I'm just getting started.
Yeah, I mean, it's great to be able to see, you know, somebody think outside the box in terms of that. I mean, you know, it's an interesting concept in terms of that as well. And you know, the kind of ink a future. I mean, you can't ink a future by just you know, just doing what you're doing. You know, maybe coming home, paying some bills, making up suits. A lot of these girls need to think about the future. They're not going to stay young forever, and they need to think about their future. So it's great to be able to see that there's a kind of a concept in mind in terms of their future as well, because they can't do it forever.
No, it's definitely that. I mean, everything you said, Teen Concept, is basically, that's the name of the company, Teen Concept Entertainment Services, LLC. All girls fill out applications online at our website, www.teenconceptentertainment.com. And what it is, we provide life skill, and basically the services we provide for our clients is life skills, and we do credit restoration for clients. We do full medical and dental benefits. You know, all contracts are two-year management agreements. Within 30 days, you receive, we start preparing your, you know, whatever your credit is looking like. We get the people in place to start fixing your credit. After 90 days of being signed with the company, then that's when your full dental and medical benefits kick in, and for you and your siblings, for you and your children, if you have any children. But basically what it does is it puts these young ladies with a group of young ladies that's already in the industry, that already know the ins and outs, that's already going in there conducting themselves as true professionals and exotic dancers in this industry with a touch of class that's almost untouchable by girls that are not part of this company. Let me just tell you that. Like, and this has been recognized by managers and owners of clubs when they see these girls, they see something that they never seen before, and they tell them this, like, we never seen girls like y'all, who work like y'all, who come in how y'all come in, who carry yourself how y'all carry yourself, who never argue, who never get mad, who never being in drama, who just come in here, always smiling, always got good energy. These are the kind of clients that Team Concept is producing. So what it is it gives them, a lot of people go into the industry with a blind eye. You know, they don't know what to expect. So a girl just go up to a club, know she's pretty, she can make money, but at the same time, she don't know that the girl as soon as she go in there, the girl that's the blowhead girl is gonna pull her and tell her, "Come on, come, I can show you how to make money." But when they go into the bathroom, she's gonna pull her in the stall and try to stuff some cocaine up her nose. Or the other girl that's going, when she go in there, the girl that's been dancing there, that know about dancing, that she may become friends with, this girl is an alcoholic. So at this time, when she tell her, "Yeah, I can show you how to make money, girl, just follow me and run with me," bam, bam, bam. But every time, every 30 minutes, they go into the bar taking 3 or 4 shots. Before at the end of the night, this young lady is sloppy drunk. So when they go in there with a blind eye, you have no direction. You tend to follow others. When you follow others, the examples that are in these clubs are not good examples. These girls are pill poppers, are drug addicts, are alcoholics. You really don't have a lot of good examples of girls that are in this industry that would be somebody to actually go in there and follow and look up to, that's going to show you the right things and put you on a positive and a prosperous path that's truly been proven to be effective. So that's what Team Concept does. It groups diverse people from different ethnicities and backgrounds, and it puts them together. And the Team Concept formula, it's a formula that makes them become a unit, and once they become a unit, you know, they become focused on the same in common goal, and the same in common goal is success.
Yeah, it gives them a little bit of job security, because a lot of these girls, you know, if they go on their own, they're gonna have to hustle and try to find a job. But by the sounds of it, your management company does that for them, to be able to say, this club needs you, or this club needs you, or whatever. And you have a group of girls that you can offer to these clubs as well. I mean, it's a really interesting concept in terms of that as well. I think it works. It benefits everybody involved. And I'm glad to see that you kind of are the innovator in that as well. So congratulations on the success on that. And I understand absolutely 100% clear how you're doing it, and it's absolutely great to be able to see that as well. I want to mention your book's currently out. Give me a second.
Game is meant to be sold. Exactly.
So you guys can check that out. Is that, I'm assuming it's on the regular outlets, on Amazon, etc.?
Yeah, it's on Amazon, Kindle. You can download it on all those digital sites, and we on our way. We should be on our way into Barnes and Nobles and all of the major bookstores. We're working on something right now through distributors, so that should be landing close to the end of this month or middle of next month, God's will. So I also want to add that it also has a matching soundtrack that goes with it, and the soundtrack, which is a 12-song CD, which is called Game is Meant to be Sold, the soundtrack. The book is called Game is Meant to be Sold, a short story, and the CD, which is the soundtrack to the book, is called Game is Meant to be Sold, the soundtrack. And that's also available on Amazon.com and iTunes as well.
And I want to mention, you guys can follow Hep on Twitter at Black Hep Show on Twitter as well. Are you on Facebook at all?
Yeah, I'm on Facebook as Black Hef, public figure. You can just go Black Hef, and then we also have the Black Hef Show as well, and that's where me and the girls update and interact with fans and people on a daily basis. But it's not just me. The Black Hef Facebook / Black Hef is me. Then the Black Hef Show, that's me and the ladies of Team Concept corresponding and interacting with people on a daily basis. Talking to fans and new girls looking to sign up, and you know, just interacting with people on a social networking side.
Yeah. Anything else coming up for you that you want to promote?
Yeah, we got Hef is looking for two new girlfriends. If they're twins, I'm with it. No big deal. I'm trying to follow greatness.
Well, we're hoping. You know
what I'm talking to? I'm just talking to you. I'm just messing with you right now. You know, you Hefner, you have the two twin girls. You know, but actually, we're just looking. I tell people all the time, I'm not looking for. People think that I'm just looking for girls. I'm looking. The search is not for girls or big booties or big breasts or anything like that. I truly want to let people know that my search for this company is for good people. Once you get good people together, it's you can build anything. So, but I'm not the people that think they got this and got that with attitudes. So I just want to add that if you know any young lady that's thinking about signing up with this company or thinking or interested getting into this industry, this is definitely a way you can get into it and become successful through it. But I just know that once you are, if you do apply online on our online application, then you know we're looking for good people. So if that's you, then, hey, don't hesitate to sign up. But we got a lot of stuff coming. The girls got music coming out. They got two videos coming. I got more books. I'm writing part two to Game Is Meant to Be Sold right now, and it's also going to be an additional soundtrack released with that book when that one comes out in the summer. So just keep your eyes open for Black Hef, a.k.a. Jacobfella. That's my writer name on the music. If you're looking for the music or the book, that's the handle I go by because I had that handle before I became the Black Hef. So I still use that as my artist name as a rapper and as my author name as a writer. But Black Hef is like Bruce Wayne. Jacobfella is like Batman, night and day.
Yeah, I can see that. And, and thanks a lot for coming on. Continue the hustle. It seems like you've diversified yourself very well and having a lot of success doing it. Hopefully when the next book comes out, we'll get you back on the show.
Sounds good. If not, I'm working on some reality show aspects as well, so maybe those things might pop up before the second book comes out. And if so, I'll definitely make sure I get right back with you and keep you updated on everything that's happening.
Well, thanks a lot, and have and best of luck to you in this year. I know it's going to be a busy one, and we'll talk to you soon.
Okay, sounds good. Thank you so much. You enjoy. Thanks and appreciate and none but love to you and all your listeners.
Okay, thank you for coming on. And like I said, sorry about the kind of mix-ups and all that as well last week, but it was an absolutely enjoyable time to be able to talk to you.
Okay, no doubt about it. Thank you so much.
Yep, talk to you later.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye. That was the Black Hef, a.k.a. Jacobfella. You guys can check him out at Black Hef Show on Twitter, so make sure you guys check that out as well. I will be back coming up on Thursday. We're going to be doing a Throwback Thursday show with Paige Hemmes from Extreme Makeover Home Edition. This is from 5 years ago, I believe. We'll be talking a little bit about that as well. So we'll have that on Thursday. A week from the day, we're going to have a film. We're going to have a person that I've met over at Sundance. This guy, his name is Richard Oliver Jr. He's a producer and celebrity host. He also produces a show called give me a second here. I'm gonna find it here real quick. The Rhyme Impersonator Show. He does it as well. So he does a lot of interviews and all that as well. I was privileged to meet him at the Indie Lounge at Sundance Wu-Tang Clan press conference, Raekwon's press conference there at Sundance. So I was able to hook up with him a little bit, but we're going to have him live on the show next week, talking a little bit about what all of his projects are going on as well, as will be on Monday. So Thursday we'll have Paige Hemmes, Throwback Thursday with Paige Hemmes, and then we'll have Richard Oliver Jr. coming up a week from today. Maybe check us out on Facebook, Somewhere in Vegas, and Somewhere in Vegas at SWIV at SWIV on Twitter for all the updated information as well. It's going to be a busy month. We'll see you guys coming up on Thursday, 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 p.m. Eastern. We are going to be live with we're going to be Throwback Thursday with Paige Hemmes on Thursday. So with that in mind, we'll talk to you guys coming up on Thursday.